Welcome to the Deeper Dive Podcast, brought to you by the OC Church of Christ. The Deeper Dive Podcast is about going deeper into God's Word, learning new insight, and taking a fresh look at the verses that impact our daily lives. Today's episode is part two from our series, Learning the Art of Motivation from Jesus by Reese Neeland. If you haven't listened to the last episode, I would encourage you to do that before you continue with this episode. This episode is titled Made to Make a Difference. Friendly reminder that this message was a sermon delivered by Reese. So get your scuba gear and let's dive deep into God's Word. Here's Made to Make a Difference.
We're going to go big today. We're going to go deep today. I want you to consider something that may be frankly uncomfortable for you. And I just want you to answer this question in your own heart. Are you really a happy person? Are you a happy person today? Have you found happiness? Are you experiencing happiness? And that's a tough question to even honestly consider. And if you will consider it, I'm going to give you credit for having some courage. Because many people don't even want to consider the possibility. They don't even want to think about it because it's too painful, frankly. Because it seems surprisingly difficult to find happiness. Have you found that to be true? I've certainly found that to be true. And sometimes success in life, we have goals, we have dreams, sometimes success can be especially disappointing. Because we thought that when we achieved this, we thought when we possessed that, we thought when we got to a certain place, and a certain place in life, and certain things happened, that we would be happy. But sometimes it's not. Sometimes we don't find that, and sometimes it's not even necessarily Our lack of happiness is not necessarily powerfully poignant, but we just, if we're really honest and we'll stop and consider in our quiet moments, we're experiencing some vague discontent. There's something missing. There's some nameless longing that we have not yet experienced. And so I believe that Jesus is going to help us with that today. This is not the only answer, but Jesus is going to give you a part of the answer today of what we all need to understand if we're really going to be happy. Sound good? So in John chapter 4, some of you may know the story. Let me just give you a little background. There are four different accounts of the life and ministry of Jesus: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And if you get a chance to read them, they're all great. There are a lot of similarities and there are a lot of differences. But when you put it all together, you get a picture of who Jesus is. And so I love that. I love studying of Jesus. I love learning about Jesus. I love sharing about Jesus. I love preaching about Jesus. And so John is kind of unusual. If you don't know, I'll just maybe explain a little bit. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are very similar, those three. And if you read them, there are a lot of similar stories. And there's even a lot of similar verbiage. And so they obviously had each other's accounts in front of them. Most scholars believe that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were written significantly before John was written. John was one of the apostles, close to Jesus, close friend of Jesus. And perhaps this is even 20 years later that John comes along and he's seen Matthew, Mark, and Luke's account of the life and ministry of Jesus. And he says, it's almost like he says, you know, there's some stories that still need to be told about who Jesus was. And so what you find in John is some very unique accounts of stories about Jesus that you don't find in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. In this story in John 4 about Jesus, this is from early in his ministry, and he's meeting this woman that we call the Samaritan woman. And he and his followers, his disciples, were traveling from Jerusalem. They're going up to Galilee in northern Israel. And so they pass through this area called Samaria, and they meet this woman. So we're going to pick up in chapter 4, verse 4. It says, now he had, Jesus, to go through Samaria. So he came to town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. And Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about the sixth hour. That means it was about noon. They started their clock at 6 a.m. Not sure what time you start your day, but that's when they started theirs. And so it says then, when a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into the town to buy food. So we're going to stop there. And I want you to understand the scene. It's very significant that Jesus stops to talk to this Samaritan woman. If you weren't aware, there was a tremendous cultural divide between men and women. Women were widely regarded as second-class citizens in that day. And so Jesus actually and Christianity were part of the forces that came to bear that really improved a lot of women in the world. I have read that it was said that during that time, one of the Jewish leaders, a teacher of the law, that it was such, the divide between men and women was so great that if he was walking out in public and that if his wife passed by, he would not acknowledge her. This is where all the women groan. I'm trying to imagine how that would work with Mary Kay. Right? And so anyway, so there's that divide. But then there's this racial divide, which we understand that it's still part of our world. Between the Samaritans and the Jews, but Jesus breaks through all that, and Jesus has this wonderful conversation with this woman while his disciples, his followers, his companions had gone into town to buy food because they were hungry. Because what happens to men around noon? They get hungry and angry if they don't get food. And so we're going to end our service about noon because I know what happens. There might be some women that are spiritual enough to stay if I keep going, but if I go much past noon, men are just going to start filing out. We're going to lose them. They're going to go find the nearest groceries that they can find. Okay. So he's hungry. So he has this great conversation with this woman. And we're not going to look at that conversation today, but we're going to skip to the end of the story. But I want to say, if you want to know better how to reach out and share your faith and help other people who don't know Jesus to find Jesus, this is a great conversation. And John, it's not in the other, you can't find it in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. John has a very specific account of what this happened and what this conversation he had with this woman was. Of course, there's a great result to it, and the woman comes to faith. But now, for our purposes, we're going to go all the way to the end of the story. We're going to go over to verse 27. So we get to the end of the story. Jesus has this great conversation with this woman. And we get to the very end of it, and then verse 27 says, "Just then, his disciples returned and were surprised to find him talking with a woman." It was surprising because that just culturally wasn't done in that day, right? "But no one asked, 'What do you want?' or 'Why are you talking with her?' Then, leaving her water jar," remember the woman had come to draw water from the well, "the woman went back to town and said to the people, 'Come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ?' They came out of the town and made their way toward him," toward Jesus. "Meanwhile, his disciples urged him, 'Rabbi,'" that means teacher, "'eat something.' But Jesus said to them," listen now, "Jesus said to them, 'I have food to eat that you know nothing about.' Then his disciples said to each other, 'Could someone have brought him food?'" You can understand why they were confused, right? We were talking about men earlier. It's science. It's simple math. There's hungry men. They go to get food. They bring food back. And Jesus is no longer hungry. There's only one conclusion you can come to, right? Somebody already brought him food. So that's what they seem not so much concerned about what's going on with the woman and all that as they are about, I mean, we went to a lot of trouble. You know, the first McDonald's we went to wasn't open. And I don't know why. It was Sunday. Maybe it was a Chick-fil-A. Because if you try to get that Christian chicken on Sunday, you're not getting it on Sunday. So whatever the problem, so he said, "We went to all this trouble and we went to get this food and we brought it back and now he's not interested in eating." And Jesus says this thing that this is early in the ministry of Jesus. And they didn't get it yet, but they got it later. And we need to all make sure we get it today. He says, look, I have food. I have food that you know nothing about. You see where we're going? Then the next thing it says, Jesus says, verse 36, my food, said Jesus, is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. Do not say 4 months more than the harvest. I tell you, open your eyes and look at the fields. They're ripe for the harvest. Even now the reaper draws wages. Even now he harvests the crop for eternal life, so that the sower and the reaper may be glad together. Thus the saying, one sows and another reaps, is true. I sent you to reap what you have not worked for. Others have done the hard work, and you have reaped the benefits from their labor. And as the story goes, the woman leaves, and she goes and tells the story of her interaction with Jesus and the fact that she's become convinced that this very well might be the Messiah, the promised one. And so Jesus is there, and the disciples are coming back with the food, but there's something else that happens. On the horizon, it says, the whole town starts coming out. And you just got to picture it if you're Jesus, and you're there, and you desperately want to share your faith, and you want other people to know the message, the good news. And so here they come, and they're coming over the hill. They're coming over the horizon. Just imagine what Jesus is feeling. Jesus is feeling like, this is why I came. This is what I'm here for. This is what matters most. This is what I want to do. See, it turns out, when it comes to happiness, God has made us all so that you will never be happy. You will never experience joy until you understand the need to make a difference. We were made to make a difference. God made us to make a difference. That's what Jesus is trying to tell these guys. He says, you guys don't understand this yet. It's early in the ministry. You don't get it yet. I have food. I have soul food. How many of you like soul food? I like soul food. I'm from the South. I even wrote down, I see some of my favorite soul food. You know what that is? Chicken fried steak, collard green, fried okra, hush puppies. Oh, yeah, see, there's a lot of Southern people who grew up in Southern California. They're confused now. Sweet potato pie. You know, those are maybe foods that we crave. Jesus understands something. He wants us to understand it. You are created, whether you're a Christian or not a Christian, you are created with a hole in your soul. And one of the things that's going to be required, if you're ever going to be fulfilled, is you're ever going to be happy, is you're going to have to live in such a way that you are making a difference in the lives of others. Even people who are not Christians have figured this out. There are many people who have professed no faith and would claim no faith, but they're doing great things, and they're serving the poor, or they're serving the community, or they're making a difference. And you know what? They're experiencing fulfillment from that. That hole in their soul is being fulfilled. You know, I have friends that are a part of Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, which is a great program, a great recovery kind of program. But one of the things, you may or may not know this, but one of the things, if somebody's going through that program and they're recovering and they get to a certain point, you know what they ask you to turn around and be a sponsor to help somebody else? Because that's where you're going to continue with your recovery. That's where you're going to find fulfillment. I remember clearly the first time that I perhaps experienced this in my Christianity. I grew up going to church, and it was sort of a traditional type church. And unlike this church, they didn't give us many choices. So it was kind of an empty experience for me. And I don't want to blame the church, because I was interested, frankly, at that point in my life. I was in my 20s. I was probably more interested in sin than I was Jesus. And so anyway, I came to a certain point. I went to graduate school at the University of Florida. So I went to the University of Florida, and I went to the ministry there, and it was a great ministry, and it was very focused on reaching out and helping others to become Christians. And so, you know, I'm just sort of trying to figure this out. I love the church and I love the Spirit. I love the relationships, and they taught me how to have a personal connection with God. And they taught me how we were helping each other to be our best spiritually. And we were reaching out to help people that weren't saved to become saved. And I was just sort of trying to figure it out. So one of the things that I did was early on, there was an older gentleman who was studying the Bible, thinking about his decision to become a Christian. And there were a group of guys that were studying the Bible with him and helping him and key relationships. I only met him at church. It'd be like if somebody was visiting here and I would talk to him a few minutes, maybe even before or after church. And he was telling me about his journey and he was telling me about his thinking about his decision he wanted to make, whether Jesus would be Lord of his life or not. And I was a brand new Christian myself. I was sort of trying to say something that would be helpful, right? You ever in that position where you just pray, God, help me to say something that would be helpful? So I was sort of that. I wasn't sure at all. And so we would talk and we would share. And this went on for several weeks. And this was back in the day. Some of you may not be able to relate to this. Some of you might. Where at the end of the service, there would be an invitation. And so the guy who was the preacher, somebody who was looking and acting like me, would say, hey, if you want to either repent publicly of sin or you want to make a decision to make Jesus Lord of your life, come forward during this last song. And so this is what we had going on. And I remember where I was sitting in the auditorium that we're in, and this guy that I had talked to stepped out of the aisle and walked forward. And I knew that he was coming forward to be baptized. And a little bit more background, you know, I had been in sin, living in sin for many years, and my heart was hard. I had not been able to cry for a long, long time. There were even times I wanted to cry, and I couldn't cry. Just couldn't break through the heart. And all of a sudden, when this man stepped forward and came, the tears just flowed. First time in years. What happened there? I wasn't even one of the people, no doubt, you know, they didn't have any sharing before his baptism, but if they had, he probably would not have mentioned me. I mean, I wasn't even one, but I thought in some way, in some small way, maybe I had a positive influence on this guy making the most important decision that he could ever make in his life, and that is to be baptized into Christ and to make Jesus Lord. In my soul, there was a hole in my soul. And I figured it out that day. Let me just say it. I want to be so clear that nobody misunderstands. You will never be happy. You will certainly never be happy the way God intended you to be happy until you deliberately decide in your actions and in your life to live in such a way as to make a difference in the lives of. Now, sharing your faith and helping somebody, it's not the only way you can make a difference. And we need to understand that. We make a difference in a lot of different ways. You make a difference when you help the poor. You make a difference when you serve somebody who has a need. And you make a difference when you visit somebody who's sick. And you make a difference when there's somebody else that you know that's struggling with their faith. And, you know, they're a Christian, but they're got issues going on, and you show up and you sit down and you love them and you pray with them and you talk with them, and you know, and you say that prayer, God help me, I don't know what I'm saying, help me to say something that's helpful. A lot of different ways you can make a difference. But let me tell you something, you will never make any more significant difference in anybody's life than when you make a difference in somebody's eternal address. When you help somebody to find Jesus, when you help somebody to find salvation, that's the gift that keeps on giving. That's the gift that keeps on giving all through eternity. It's not the only way to make a difference. But there's no more significant way to make a difference. Church, I hope we don't forget that. When we moved here in 1989, some of you know, there were 50 of us. But, you know, what's happened since 1989? What are we, about 6,000 now? All around the Orange County, Inland Empire, Ventura County, Antelope Valley, wherever, you know, L.A., all that. How did that happen? Well, it happens because God worked. But it also happens because people decide that they want to make a difference. And they reach out and they share their faith with their neighbors and with their family and with their friends and then with their coworkers, because they want to make a difference. Tell you the funny thing about it is, even when you're trying to make a difference, even if you don't necessarily feel like you're succeeding or it's not really working, the fact that you're extending yourself, the fact that you're putting yourself out there, you're going to find a fulfillment that you will not otherwise have. You were made to make a difference. You weren't made to live for yourself. You weren't made to list, you know, I think bucket list is great. But, you know, a lot of times bucket list is like all the things I want to do for myself before I die. It's not wrong to have a bucket list. But if you're living for your bucket list instead of living for Jesus and living for your neighbor, you're not going to be happy. I don't care if you do climb Mount Kilimanjaro. I don't care if you do jump out of an airplane, which I don't understand. Why would anybody jump out of a perfectly good airplane? How many of you have done that? See, you're strange. We love you though. It's not normal. I'm just saying. But we love you though. I don't get it. Why would anybody run a marathon? I mean, I can understand running and I try to exercise and, you know, run a little bit and, you know, get in shape and all that. But a marathon, do you know that's 26.2 miles? And you're supposed to run it consecutively, right? I mean, you're not supposed to spread it out over a week or a month. Why would anybody do that? Not on my bucket list, but we gotta live. You were made to make a difference. Did I say that already? Is anybody confused? You were made to make a difference. You know, I mean, one of the things that we're doing, we've been in my ministry back in our part of Los Angeles. We've been serving at a Union Station Homeless Services in Pasadena for quite a few years. We feed the homeless. We help the homeless. And, you know, they started a new program just recently. And because people in our church were so active and so involved in serving with them, they really like us. We're good volunteers. And so we showed up and started. So they said, we're starting a new program, a mentoring program for people who are transitioning out of homelessness. And so they're going to, you know, no longer be dependent on others for food and services. But the idea is they're going to go back into the community, resume a more normal lifestyle. And they asked specifically if our church would supply mentors to mentor people. And so I signed up for that. But I got to tell you, I'm back praying again. Lord, I have no idea what I'm doing here. Just help me to say something that make a difference. I've never mentored a homeless person before. And the truth is, I'll say this, you don't have to raise your hand, but some of us have experiences with homelessness. And some maybe you have yourself, or maybe somebody you know. It's a serious deal. And most of the people that are homeless, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons that people are homeless, but one of them is they've got drug addiction problems and they got mental illness problems. And just the fact that they're getting off the street doesn't mean that all their drug problems have gone away and all their mental illness has gone away. I'm sitting here. Pray for me. I am nervous. I am a normal God-fearing pastor, you know, who lives in Pasadena. I got no idea. I said, what do you do? How do you mentor somebody who's homeless? Well, you know, people are homeless that are making this transition. They can feel lonely because all their friends are still on the street and they need somebody to help them. It may be as simple as balancing their checkbook, and it may be as simple as, you know, being a friend and being there for them and helping them to feel like they can do it, because their tendency is going to be to go right back where they were. And not just me, there's a bunch of people in my, said, okay, this is a new experience. We have never done this before, but we are going to sign up and we're going to try. I'm going to pray, God, help me to make a difference. But, you know, I'm excited about it. I'm more excited about this than I am going down and doing, you know, we make breakfast on Saturdays, a lot of times on Saturdays, and we'll feed the homeless. I'm more excited about this. But you know why I'm more excited, right? Because this is a chance to make a bigger difference, to make a life difference, not just feed somebody who's hungry one meal. And so I don't know how it's going to turn out. Enough said. God made you to make a difference. There's a hole in your soul that will never, you will never find fulfillment until you live your life as God intended you to be, to live, to be somebody who makes a difference in the lives around you. And you know what? It's going to help them. You know who else is going to help? Help you. You're going to find something that you're not going to otherwise find when you decide to live as God made you and to make a difference.
Thank you again for listening to this episode of Deeper Dive by the OC Church of Christ. Our next episode will be the finale of our series, Learning the Art of Motivation from Jesus. That is titled, As I Have Loved You. If you want to get connected to us or want to donate to the program, go to our website, OCChurchOfChrist.com, or on social media at the OC Church. Join us next time for our next Deeper Dive.